listening to the King's Church Ringwood podcast. For more information, please visit www.kingschurchringwood.co.uk.
It's been quite some time since I last preached. I think it was back in August. And I wasn't suspended, by the way. I did ask for have a bit of a break, and graciously got awarded a bit of a break. But it's good for me personally to get back into it, because I'm not very disciplined. I mean, I am disciplined by Helen, but self-discipline, I'm not very disciplined. So to have a passage, I've got to study this passage, has been really good. Now, Rob said about preaching from our favourite chapters in Isaiah. Now, I can't say that chapter 14 is one of my favourites, but I do think it is fascinating. And so, here we go. And I'm going to read verses 1 to 23. The Lord will have compassion on Jacob. Once again, he will choose Israel and will settle them in their own land. Aliens will join them and unite with the house of Jacob. Nations will take them and bring them to their own place. And the house of Israel will possess the nations as men servants and maid servants in the Lord's hands. They will make captives of their captors and rule over their oppressors. On the day the Lord gives you relief from suffering and turmoil and cruel bondage, you will take up this taunt against the king of Babylon. How the oppressor has come to an end. How his fury has ended. The Lord has broken the rod of the wicked, the scepter of the rulers, which in anger struck down peoples with unceasing blows, and in fury subdued nations with relentless aggression. All the lands are at rest and at peace. They break into singing. Even the pine trees and the cedars of Lebanon exult over you and say, now that you have been laid low, no woodsman comes to cut us down. The grave below is all astir to meet you at your coming. It rouses the spirits of the departed to greet you. All those who are leaders in the world, it makes them rise from their thrones. All those who are kings over the nations, they will all respond. They will all say to you, you also have become weak as we are. You have become like us. All your pomp has been brought down to the grave, along with the noise of your harps. Maggots are spread out beneath you, and worms cover you. How you have fallen from heaven, O morning star, son of the dawn. You have been cast down to the earth, you who once laid low the nations. You said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven. I will raise my throne above the stars of God. I will sit enthroned on the Mount of Assembly, on the utmost heights of the sacred mountain. I will ascend above the tops of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High. But you are brought down to the grave, to the depths of the pit. Those who see you stare at you, they ponder your fate. Is this the man who shook the earth and made kingdoms tremble? The man who made the world a desert, who overthrew its cities and would not let the captives go home? All the kings of the nations lie in state, each in his own tomb. But you are cast out of your tomb like a rejected branch. You are covered with the slain, with those pierced by the sword. Those who descend to the stones of the pit. Like a corpse trampled underfoot, you will not join them in burial, for you have destroyed your land and killed your people. The offspring of the wicked will never be mentioned again. Prepare a place to slaughter his sons for the sins of the forefathers. They are not to rise to inherit the land and cover the earth with their cities. I will rise up against them, declares the Lord Almighty. I will cut off from Babylon her name and survivors, her offspring and descendants, declares the Lord. I will turn her into a place for owls and into swampland. I will sweep her with the broom of destruction, declares the Lord Almighty. Wow. Well, firstly, I was thinking, what did this message mean to the original hearers, to Isaiah's contemporaries, the exiled people of Israel? Now, it's part of a larger prophecy against Babylon, against the Assyrian empire, which begins in chapter 13. But this passage has at its heart a lament. Now, a lament is a slow, sad Hebrew song, meant to be normally a sympathetic song. You see, we have the book of Lamentations. But God says about this lament, make it a taunt. Taunt the king of Babylon. The empire was going to fall. God had ordained it. The king of Babylon was going to fall. And there would be relief for Jacob, for God's people. They would be freed. They would be restored. Once again, God's compassion would shine on them. And they would be given the nations as their possession. God was going to turn the present situation right on its head. Instead of being captives, they would take captive their captors. It would mean relief not only for Israel, but there were many peoples who had suffered under this empire. Many peoples who had been exiled to foreign land. It said the king of Babylon would not let them go home. That's how he ruled. He moved people to foreign lands. But all the peoples would break out in singing at the fall of Babylon. But not only the people, but also the trees would rejoice. The trees had been cut down year upon year by the king of Babylon to make his cities and his palaces. That wouldn't happen anymore. They would no longer be carried off. And often in Scripture, nature is synonymous with the people of God. So when nature is suffering, when there's a desert and whatever, then that means a difficult time, perhaps a judgment time on the people of God. When nature is flourishing, then the people of God are being blessed. Isaiah 55:12, it says, the trees of the field will clap their hands. Never seen trees clap their hands, but it's synonymous of the people of God being happy. So Jacob, the peoples, the trees, all joined together in rejoicing at the fall of Babylon. And the king of Babylon, what does a king want when they pass away, when they die? They want a lie in state, and they want their line to continue through their heirs. But that would not be allowed for the king of Babylon. His line would not continue, and he would be turned out ignominiously. And it is because of the cruelty of the king of Babylon. In our day, we say such things like, how can people do that to each other? I was thinking back to the Rwandan genocide, and you think, how did people do that to each other? They made ISIS come along and their barbarities. But in this day, in this empire, you would think, how can they do that to other people? They were so cruel. They were wicked and they were merciless. In the passage we read, it said that they, in anger, they struck down peoples with unceasing blows and in fury subdued nations with relentless aggression. And therefore God judged him and said to the ground, get ready to receive him because he's coming. Verse 11 again. Maggots are spread out beneath you and worms cover you. Now I've got in my will I want to be buried, but I'm kind of reconsidering after reading that. He would come to a horrible end. So Isaiah's contemporaries would see a real kingdom, a tangible, a material kingdom. It would be in their face, the rule and the tyranny of Babylon. Revelation talks about the downfall of Babylon the Great. And first century Christians, they would soon see a real kingdom, tangible, material, in their face, the emperor, the persecution they suffered, that would be Babylon for them. But Babylon the Great is applicable to every age, including ours, because it's not a material kingdom, it's a spiritual empire, a world order. And it has a king, and it has a king, Satan, that stands opposed to God and its people, and it stands for excessive luxury. Now, I think that means inequality. excessive luxury, greed, indulgence, immorality, and oppression. And the king of Babylon, and Babylon the Great, is blamed for the persecution and the martyrdom of all the saints through the ages. It's a proud kingdom. It says, in her heart she boasts, I sit enthroned as queen. I am not a widow. I will never mourn. But it too will fall. Even though, like the first Babylon, it seems impregnable. Now, the first Babylon, it had massive walls, really high, really thick, really long. Outside these walls, it had the river, the Euphrates, I think, the river, a natural moat around it. It was impregnable, so they thought. But on the day that the people of the Babylonians were reveling and getting drunk because they weren't worried about the siege going on around them, the king of Cyrus, as prophesied by Jeremiah, had diverted the river. So the river did run dry, as Jeremiah said. And the Persians got in to the walls, and while they were still drunk and didn't know anything about it, they were overcome. And that will be so again. Because in Revelation chapter 18, there's another lament. Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a dwelling for demons and a haunt for every impure spirit. A haunt for every unclean bird, a haunt for every unclean and detestable animal. For all the nations have drunk the maddening wine of her adulteries. The kings of the earth committed adultery with her, and the merchants of the earth grew rich from her excessive luxuries. Babylon the Great. Now, often in the Old Testament, there is the first meaning to a passage, which would have been the meaning for that time and place. But there's also a second meaning, which is either for a future time and place, or is has an eternal significance, an eternal meaning. And there are many. This is called an allegory. Now, an allegory is a story or a poem or a picture that can be interpreted to reveal a hidden meaning. There are many prophetic allegories, I think, about Jesus in the Old Testament. But I also believe there's a couple about Satan. And I think one of them is here. Now, to be fair to you, when I look this up, not everyone thinks this. Calvin, for one, thinks this is all about the king of Babylon. So some do, don't think this is about Satan, but many do, and I do. You see, I see in these verses something that alludes past to what an earthly king, what is about an earthly king, and that's in verses 12 to 15. I don't know if they can come up now, but in 12 to 15, see an allegory as beyond the earthly king of Babylon, but the king of Babylon the Great. I want to compare this with the second one, Ezekiel 28, 12 to 19, which you might want to look up, but I'll read it to you. This is what the Sovereign Lord says. You were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone adorned you, chameleon, chrysolite and emerald, topaz, onyx and jasper, lapis lazuli, turquoise and beryl. Your settings and mountings were made of gold. On the day you were created, they were prepared. You were anointed as a guardian cherub, for so I ordained you. You were on the mount, holy mount of God. You walked among the fiery stones. You were blameless in your ways from the day you were created until wickedness was found in you. Through your widespread trade, you were filled with violence and you sinned. So I drove you in disgrace from the mount of God, and I expelled you, guardian cherub, from among the fiery stones. Your heart became proud on account of your beauty, and you corrupted your wisdom because of your splendor. So I threw you to the earth. I made a spectacle of you before kings. By your many sins and dishonest trade, you have desecrated your sanctuaries. So I made fire come out from you, and it consumed you. And I reduced you to ashes on the ground in the sight of all who were watching. All the nations who knew you were appalled at you. You have come to a horrible end and will be no more. So I'll lead you to make up your own mind, but the moral of pride and fall remains the same. And there's a proverb, Proverbs 16, verse 18. It's often misquoted as pride goes before a fall, but what it says is pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. And Satan is the one who is the model of pride. Now you notice in our verse 12, it says, O morning star, son of the dawn. Now the Hebrew phrasing, translated morning star, literally means shining one. And it was the name given to the planet Venus. And I've seen planet Venus. Scott has showed me on his little app where you get the stars and all the stars appear up. And if you see a star that's left over in the morning, it's the planet Venus. Excuse me. Now, in the Latin translation of the Bible, the Vulgate, this is translated as Lucifer. So this is where the name Lucifer comes from. I didn't know that before. Plenty of you are nodding, you already knew that, but I didn't know that before. He was the shining one, created by God to be beautiful and wise, but it went to his head long ago. He used to inhabit heaven. He had a noble place there, but he lost it on account of his rebellion, which was fueled by his pride, and he was cast down to the earth. Yet we still see in Job that Satan had access to heaven, although no longer an angel. Strange, I know. But listen, this is Job 1:6. One day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. The Lord said to Satan, Where have you come from? Satan answered the Lord, From roaming throughout the earth, going to and fro on it. But now, where we are, he has lost any access to heaven, and he has fallen and cast down upon the earth. He's a defeated adversary, defeated by the kingdom of heaven. So when Jesus sent out the 72 disciples, and they came back, and they were saying, Hey, this, how did you, Jesus, how did you go on? And they're saying, Well, it was great. It's marvelous. And even the demons submitted to us in your name. And Jesus said, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. When did this further fall occur? I believe it was at the coming of Christ and the establishment of the kingdom of heaven. And I see this in Revelation 12. Then war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back. But he was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. The great dragon was hurled down, that ancient snake called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. He was hurled to the earth, and his angels with him. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven say, Now have come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ. For the accuser of our brothers and sisters, who accuses them before our God day and night, has been held down. And what I saw, I've never seen this before, what I saw is that what Michael was able to do in heaven was only because of what Jesus had done on earth. Jesus took the ground from underneath the devil's feet. He had no purchase left, and Michael hurled him down. No one has fallen further than Satan. No one has fallen further than that. From dizzying heights all the way down to the earth with a terrible destruction to follow. And you've got to say, why? Why did he do it? It's all on account of pride. Pride leading to rebellion is the first sin. He was filled with pride on the account of the way he was being made. But instead of giving glory to the one who made him, he wanted to be like his creator. He wanted to rule and not to follow. He said, I will make myself like the Most High. But Satan knows that his time is short. He's defeated. He awaits horrible judgment. And therefore he's furious. He's a furious foe. Furious at man. Furious in particular against Christians, the followers of Christ. And I see him like a gladiator. A gladiator who's been mortally wounded. Maybe he's got through the belly. He's going to die. But he's not quite gone. And he's thrashing around, thinking who he can get to take with him. He'd want to take as many with him as he can get. So Satan's sin, pride and rebellion, is the way that he gets man as well. In the Garden of Eden, this is what he said. You will not certainly die, the serpent said to the woman, for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened. And this is the thing. And you will be like God, knowing good and evil. His temptation to man is you can be like God. You can choose your good and your evil. Now, we see God as faithful. Because he is. God, our Father, is forever faithful. In Deuteronomy it says, and underneath are the everlasting arms. Eternal faithfulness and love for the people of God. Now, do you remember Jungle Book? Not the new one, the original cartoon one. And you've got Mowgli. And Mowgli meets Kaa the snake. And Kaa the snake is going, trust in me, trust in me. And he's got these eyes going, trust in me. And he's got a wiggly tongue. I'm not going to wiggle my own tongue. That would be, you don't want to see that. Trust in me. And Mowgli's going, And that's how the devil works. Trust in me. And he's carrying us along. Trust in me. And you're in temptation, or it might be that something makes you angry, or it might be something, unforgiveness that you have. He's going, yeah. And he'd carry you along into sin, and then when you're in sin, he drops you. And that's when you go, oh, I'm such a fool. How did I fall for that? That's how sin works. That's how the devil works. And he goes, ha, I've got you. He's not faithful, he's faithless. Because he hates us. He has no regard for man. He wants to take us with him. If we choose pride, when people choose pride, they follow his way. I will make myself like the Most High. So the devil turns to undermine the word of God, the truth, and invites people to make up their own truth. You will be like God, knowing good from evil. Don't we see it ever more so in this age that people are invited to decide their own truth, to make up their own minds what is good and what is evil? And it's all because he wants us to go the same way he did. Now, a friend of mine, an ex-friend of mine, sadly, once said to me, you're the humblest person I know. I thought that was a really nice thing for him to say to me. I was nearly too humble to tell you that. It was a joke. But no one knows us like we know ourselves. And God knows us best of all. And I'm going to tell you about my two pet hates. One has nothing to do with this, so bear with me. The second one does. First pet hate, people who leave fog lights on when it's not foggy. Driving behind this big, massive red light into my brain, and it's not foggy. And I think, why have they left the fog light on? Shouldn't happen. If you do that, don't tell me, because I don't want to think less of you. Okay. And my second pet hate is people who act like they own the pavement. You know what I mean? Not just, you know, it might be a small group of people, or it might be a couple walking arm in arm, and they think, I'm coming through. Everybody scatter, we're coming through. And that riles me. And I think, I've got this pavement too. And I've clashed shoulders with people, clipped elbows with people. No, I'm not talking about women. I don't throw women into the gutter or anything. I'm talking about men. If there's women, I'll just stand there. I think you have to walk around me. Walk around me. That's why I am. There's a particular pavement in Lymington. It goes from the bottom of the high street towards the yacht club, and it's only two people wide. That is a battleground for me. Now, do I react this way because I'm a crusader for fair play on the pavements of Britain? Or is it my pride rubbing up with their pride, reacting to their pride, and I'm saying, no, I'm not going to give way. I think it's that one, really, isn't it? We've all got pride, which we battle with. Now, about Babylon the Great, God says, this is Revelation 18:4, come out of her, my people, so you will not share in her sins. And we have been called, and called to be different, called to be set apart. And I want you to consider the contrast between Jesus, the King of Heaven, and Satan, the King of Babylon. Satan was created to hold a great position, much authority, but he'd been thrown down to the earth. He was wrestled and he was hurled down against his will. Jesus, the creator rather than the created, the only begotten Son of God, willingly gave up his position of authority to come down here. Satan became conceited and proud because of how beautiful he was. Jesus, great glory. We saw that in the Transfiguration. We see the glory of Jesus. But he came down here and made himself ordinary. It says he had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. Now, Satan was full of pride, thinking even to challenge God. Can you imagine that? So proud that you challenge God for supremacy. But Jesus is full of humility, even washing the disciples' feet. Now, I think Peter says what everyone else is thinking. And when he got to Peter, this is paraphrase, but he kind of said, what are you doing? You've got to be joking. You're not washing my feet. Don't we have a servant to do that? You're not washing my feet. Just couldn't believe that Jesus would do such a humble thing. But Jesus said, I have set you an example that you should do as I have done to you. He is their example. Now, Satan reached for the sky, literally reached for the sky to grab the stars. But he's been flung down to the earth and he'll be flung again into hell. But Jesus, on the other hand, he lowered himself. He humbled himself. In Philippians 2, we see that he humbled himself on three levels. He was in himself God, yet he made himself nothing. He emptied himself. He emptied himself to take on our nature. He became obedient to death. Became a servant, and his greatest act of service was to die for each one of us, for every person, doing the will of the Father. But even lower, it says, even death on a cross. You could not get a lower, more degrading death than the cross. It was a cursed death, that low. That's how he went. Satan wanted to do this. but he went down. Jesus humbled himself, therefore it says God has exalted him to the highest place. And that's how it works. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. So pride, I think, is a danger. It's a danger because it gives the devil a foothold to lever you away from God. But humility is a protection against the devil's schemes. So we're going to come to the Lord's Supper. I'm going to ask you a question of myself and of you. Who am I and who are you to act the big shot when we consider Jesus? It's just out of place, isn't it? And I was thinking about these words of the hymn. It's, first line is, when I survey the wondrous cross. And in my firm, we do surveys. We survey buildings. We survey land. And when you do a survey, you note everything about it. You record everything about it. You consider everything. So that's what it's, when I survey, when I consider the wondrous cross on which the Prince of Glory died, my richest gain I count but loss, and pour contempt on all my pride.
Is to make Christ the King known in Ringwood and beyond. For more information or to give feedback, please visit www.kingschurchringwood.co.uk.